You're listening to Gone Mobile, your input and output for all things .NET MAUI and mobile.
Welcome back to another Gone Mobile. This is episode 99, and do you know what that means?
What does that mean?
Well, the next one will be one more than 99, which is 100.
That was like a bad dad joke, man. Like, that was terrible.
Well, I mean, hey, if the shoe fits, right? if the New Balance sneaker fits, then...
Oh, do you have those for your...
I do. I had to get the dad running shoes to go to Disney, because, like, the one thing I've learned from going there in the past is you don't have to care about what your footwear looks like. It just needs to save your feet, right?
Exactly. So. No, I agree. So does it look like a moon boot or something? Like you could walk on out in space with them, or what?
I was told by my wife that they're actually kind of in style, maybe even. I don't know this for sure. I can't confirm or deny because I don't know.
Your wife has to support you, though. True. She'd probably be the first one to kick you while you're down, but... Still.
Yeah. So 100 episodes now. I mean, I think you're kind of cheating a little bit. Like, this is what, how many have we done together since we rebooted?
I don't know.
Yeah, you 8? Weren't expecting that question.
No, I usually come prepared. No.
Be more than 8.
Oh, yeah, look at that. So we started at 88. Okay. So this is episode 11 for me. Yeah, okay, I cheated, but. And I was never on this show before, and I've been around this for a long time. I'm actually pretty offended by that. You were surprised.
No, I was. I actually remember looking back at one point in the episodes and looking at the guests, and I'm like, I'm sure that we had you on to talk about something. And no, I guess not.
It's because I only wrote plugins at the time. Nothing UI. Xamarin always loves its UI. It doesn't like all the stuff that keeps mobile going. Whatever.
I feel we talked about some plugin area things too, but I guess not enough.
People are still using user dialogues. I released an update this week because somebody was like, are you going to update this? And then, you know, of course, good friend Dan was like, hey, I'm using user dialogues. Are you going to update this thing? And I was like, yeah, okay. It only takes like a couple minutes. So I did. Doesn't take that much effort. Whatever. Just don't bug me for features.
I already had taken my dependency on it out. I mean, as I had a dependency on it to begin with. So you're always giving me the gears about not ever taking dependencies on things. I was using user dialogues until you stopped updating it. Yeah, yeah.
I don't believe you. Oh, for Windows. Yeah, okay. That was more of a demo than anything. But anyhow.
To be fair, I mean, I was using the things that I wrote or inherited or whatever, and then I think the Cheese Baron has been, you know, keeping the lights on them ever since. There's like the what are they called?
Yeah, you had those good loader
BT
plugins.
Progress HUD, which was originally by Nick. Was it Nick?
Nick Weiss.
No, it's Fast Chicken. Yeah. I can only think of people's handles, not their actual names.
I'm pretty sure it was Nick Weiss. Okay. Is that how you pronounce his name? Not Wise.
Might be. It's been a while. Yeah. So that one, and then I had done a binding and? Or a port of
no, like, it was a port. Both of them were ports. HUD.
Yeah. So I still use those. They still work. They're all right.
Yeah, they're still going. I pulled in updates. It looks like Cheese Baron has updated them to, well, they're at a 2.0. Minor things. I don't know. He keeps them going. I mean, he loves his native
whatever support.
Native .NET, iOS, Android. I love that he keeps that going. I know the world is all MAUI now, especially for you Microsoft guys, but there are native guys out there, and I still love it. I love that it's out
it's
there.
Like, you know, now it's kind of like a hipster artisan kind of, you know, handcrafted native app code thing.
They do all right with it. I mean, he's keeping MVVM Cross going too, which, I mean, everybody's used that at one point, especially when back in the PCL days. It was fantastic. Well, it still is fantastic. Their binding language was awesome. You know, that was pre-XAML.
Yeah.
I think he's still doing that stuff, and you gotta love
him. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I mean, and that was, you know, speaking of episodes of the past, like that Greg Shackles, right? They were a big user of MVVM Cross at the time. So,
I will say one thing. Cool library. It's still out there. He's still updating it. But be nice to Tomas. Is that how you pronounce his name? I'm sorry if I pronounced your name. He is the tallest dude that I've ever seen for a developer. If you piss him off, I can guarantee you he could crush you. So be nice. Be nice. But, be nice to all open source developers.
He's also really nice too.
Yeah, he's a nice dude. But seriously, if somebody, if you were ever going to be worried about a developer that could crush you, it would be him. He is a tough looking guy.
So yeah, that is a good comment to remember as well, right? Be nice to your open source developers. That's something that I think is increasingly difficult these days in terms of wanting to put code out there and creating things. And now, you know, I know this week we want to talk a little bit about some of that, some of the idea of creating these things. You and I both have a long history of creating, you know, things that we throw out into the world as generally, you know, NuGet packages and libraries like that, right?
Yep.
What's like the first library that you would kind of say you did this with?
I know User Dialogues comes up, but it was not the first. It was actually File System was the big one. So when
which one was that?
What the hell did I call it? I don't even remember now. It was that and Cache was actually the first libraries I wrote. It was back with Monotouch and when Mono Android was first coming out, like Novell. Miguel had just put that thing out. We were doing a POC in the company I worked for at the time. And things were pretty radical then, right? Like I needed to know the file system. Figured out how to do it. It was kind of ugly. The progression of these plugins was awesome to see over the last few years. I mean, it's where it is now compared to where it was then. It's awesome. But the first ones I wrote was a file system. I don't remember the name of it. And User Dialogues came not too long after. And then I think I fell in love with everything and I went a little bit crazy for a few years. It seemed like it was you were writing more of the UI components, and then James and I were going kind of head to head back with plugins. MVVM Cross, actually, I want to put this out there. MVVM Cross really invented our plugin ecosystem on Xamarin. It's not James. Yeah, it's not myself.
That's fair. Yeah.
They already had a whole whack of these things going. And Stuart at the time, I forget his last name.
Stuart Lodge.
Yeah. He was writing a whole whack of this stuff back then. He really got it going. Yeah. Now they were all simplistic plugins. I think they updated over the years, but he really kind of started that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, well, along comes Xamarin Forms and all these other things. And then I think that's when plugins really kind of got going, because we couldn't be vendor locked or framework locked.
Yeah.
Even now, I still try not to get framework locked on Maui.
Well, this is why I write my own stuff, so I don't get plugin locked. Yeah. So I was looking through my Git repo history, going as far back as I could, right? And I was looking for what did I first start creating that I put out into the world? And a lot of it focused around things I needed for my app at the time, which was that push notification for Gmail accounts, right? That janky thing that I would log in on your behalf and monitor your emails and send you notifications.
I don't remember that one.
It was all Objective-C. It was before Monotouch was a thing.
Okay.
And so I did the whole WebView wrapper of Gmail, because at the time Apple only did push notifications for email for iCloud accounts and I think AOL accounts or something at the time, but it didn't work with Gmail. And I'm like, I use Gmail and I need to have my emails, sent to me ASAP, right? The world of I can do it, so I want to do it. And so I made the app and I made this whole server in .NET and did the server side thing and sent notifications out and hosted the web view and invoked JavaScript to hide elements and stuff to make it look a little bit better for the app. And, it actually did okay. And I feel like I missed my moment in time for having one of those apps that blew up. So what happened was I made the app. I uploaded it to the store, and then we went to Europe for 2 weeks, right as soon as I did that, this long trip we had planned. And back then, it wasn't there was Wi-Fi places and stuff. I brought a laptop, but it wasn't I had a phone and data and was connected there and stuff so much. So went to Europe, and then I, midway through the trip, I get an app rejection, you know, from Apple or for, yeah, from the App Store process. And that they rejected it because I didn't check the box that said, like, this app could display content, you know, for 18 plus, because it was hosting a web view, essentially, even though it was restricted to like Gmail. They're like, no, you got to check that box. So you, I just resubmitted.
You can still get some X-rated images through Gmail occasionally.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Them. Yeah. But like, you know, I'm just like, really, like, could you not just check the box for me? Right. Like,
they haven't changed either.
No, I know. I didn't change the binary. I just changed the listing and resubmitted it. And that at that point in time, App Store reviews were like, you could have it take weeks, right? Like there was a time where it took forever. And in that time frame, before I could get it approved and on the store, somebody else did the same thing. And theirs shot up to like number one in the store for a while. And I was so mad because I'm like, I could have made all the money in the world, right? I charged like 99 cents for this thing. So anyway.
You missed.
A lot of libraries kind of revolved around doing stuff like that. Like I wrote some IMAP client at one point. I wrote some stuff for Monotouch, like dialogue. I remember writing like a custom drawn dialogue or list table cell or something like that.
All right.
You know, I ported some of the URL, you know, helper kind of libraries. There was that one URL image view helper on Android. And then, oh, Passkit stuff. I wrote a Passkit parser. That was fun. And then the one that, you know, kind of started me down the road of doing more of this was Zebra Crossing. So I made...
Was it Zebra Crossing that was first?
Yeah, so it was a journey. Because
Push Sharp
was there too, but I think that was... I had started a separate, I did a GCM Sharp, so like the Google Cloud messaging. I did that first, and then I think Push Sharp I did later because I'm like, well, I want all the platforms, right? Push Sharp was like the library that was, and probably still is, the most used thing that I've done, most popular library. Like at one point, the number of stars on it was kind of crazy for what it was.
Yeah, you blew up.
But
you went viral, John. You went viral.
Yeah, I went GitHub viral. But Zebra Crossing was kind of my, like, it was a journey. It was trying to figure out at first I was trying to port like Zebra Crossing, the Java library, to be able to use it from .NET, and then try and use that inside an app and all these different things. And it was a bit of a journey to get it to where it eventually landed. And then now that we're in Maui, you know, there's other plugins out there that do this and probably do a better job too. I did do a simple port, but it was kind of one of those like, it works for the basic my scenario. If you want to do anything more complicated, you're probably going to be on your own a bit.
It did work well. I used it a bunch of times. It's when I did notice there's still a crossover, like when you get to hardcore scanning or stuff where you need like turbo, like Zebra Crossing the algorithm.
Yeah,
it's fastest just in the world.
Not that fast.
There's out there like scanned it.
Yeah, back in the Xamarin days.
It's still there. And that one's like lightning. You don't even have to put it, you know, they say center the image and you're like,
yeah,
it sees like a corner of it and it's already like, I got it. Good.
And you know, to be fair, like the devices have gotten better too. So now it Zebra Crossing, all of their algorithms work okay now. Like they're not, maybe still not as good as Scandit by far, I'm sure. So if like you were building an app and the app's like sole function was to scan barcodes, like go use a good component and pay for it.
Use a paid
right?
solution.
Yeah. which is kind of an interesting, you know, topic in this conversation too, right? We put these things out there. We have all these libraries and plugins, and there's a lot of people that are spending their time and energy and putting these things out into the world for free generally, right? And usually it kind of, I think it's fair to say that most people who are putting code out there in this kind of form, part of it is at least because they needed it themselves at one point or still do, right?
That's why
it's kind of self-serving, right?
I do it. Just in case, I don't know that we covered the topic, but we are talking about architecting these plugins and frameworks, right? Especially the cross-platform stuff. So yeah, I think when I started doing it, it was a need. It was a business need, and then it became fun, right? Like a lot of the cross-platform and the way that things were evolving there was kind of fun. And like none of these things existed. So I went crazy. I started doing geofencing, settings, Bluetooth, like you name it. I still use some of those. I use pretty much all of them. All of Shiny is used professionally somewhere. And that's why I write it. I write it because, one, I forget how these things work. I don't know. Do you even think now, if you had to go in and remember how to write stuff in iOS, that you would remember?
I do that, or I have more recently done that on occasion. So like one of the things I've been playing with is collection view stuff, right, with my virtual list view.
Yeah.
And part of that has just been kind of keeping a separate iOS only app just to like implement stuff there and see how it works without any MAUI stuff involved. And so, but yeah, it's like hard to remember. I'm like, oh, I need a UI view controller. And then I got to add my views to it. And then I got to make all these like delegate things. Like what?
It's crazy. Yeah. And then when you start doing it cross-platform, you're like, okay, I got to remember the other side of this equation now. Right. So it was always a challenge, right? Back then it was fun. You know, we attacked one problem area and we had lesser APIs, I want to say, back then. And now we have like a gajillion, right?
Yeah.
It's like a gajillion APIs. Everybody needs more and more and more. So you're constantly building on those things. So it just, the plugin world got hard. Like it really did, because you needed so much more on top of this. So it wasn't just remembering all the things. It was like, okay, yeah, now this has to geofencing. You know, these are the options on Android. You got to save that geofence because Android is stupid. It doesn't remember anything you tell it. So yep. If a reboot happens, it's gone. iOS remembers all those things.
Yeah, but iOS, I recall at one point, I think I did this like as a contract thing for a company. They're like, we want to do like 10,000 geofences in our iOS app. It's like, well, you can't do that. I mean, not with like just the straight APIs, right? So I did something to like, you know, keep the fence locations and do like rough location and swap them in and out and do all that kind of fun stuff. So, but yeah, like there's so many different things that you...
Well, I have one that I still haven't released. It's built on the locations, the Shiny GPS, right, for background. But the geofencing is done through GeoJSON, and it just keeps going. It's like, okay, are you in this geofence? Are you transitioning? And it watches it. It does it fairly smart. So I don't release everything as open source. I built a lot of professional stuff on it.
Mm-hmm.
One day I should release it as a licensed product, but I won't. I might. I don't know. But the whole point was, is that you have to have all these things to build on, right? It's
yeah.
Like Lego.
Yeah.
It's like Lego. And
yeah. And the world of like putting those pieces together has gotten a lot simpler. One of the things that I was scanning through the repositories that I had in my own, org or name, was a fork of something like Newtonsoft.json, because back in the day we had to like recompile it so that we could use it with SignalR because it didn't compile, you know, for the targets we needed and that kind of stuff. So like, yeah, a lot of these things were built out of necessity, but we've definitely evolved to the point where we're in a better place, and it's generally easy to plug things together and to find something that does what you want. Like if you search, you know, you're probably, even with MAUI stuff, like I'm finding there's something out there. It might not be the thing you want, but worst case, often it's like, okay, there's a NuGet. Maybe it doesn't work how I want, but there's also a repository that they're linking to in the NuGet, and I can go get that code and, you know, fork it and use it as I need to, right?
This is something you do generally. This is you. So John recently, this is one of the things too, as we kind of get into the topic of how I usually, or how we approach writing these things. One of the things I like to think about too is the people that I do a lot of work with. So John and I, obviously, if we're talking, I like his code, he likes my code usually, but he doesn't use my code. And because you don't do a lot of background stuff.
No.
We're two different ends of the spectrum. You're better at the UI stuff anyways. I hate UI. I'm not good with pixels. But one of the things is that a lot of these things, like when I'm trying to think of an API, so John doesn't generally tend to take dependencies. He's like the worst. He's like a big stone wall.
Yep.
I get it because those Android dependencies, man, they're big, they're painful. There's a lot. And I know one of the key things is that a lot of people tend to take open source as like a crutch, right? You don't want to take it as a crutch. You want to take it as a time saver, mm-hmm. right? So if you're looking for that thing to just do, you know, this small aspect, it's great. And you also get to learn what's kind of going on underneath. So that's one of the things you generally like to do. You have to know how it works.
Yeah.
If you don't know how it works, you're going to dig first.
Yeah. And then, I might find out, like, I don't like how you did this and how it works, so I don't want to use it. Or I might be like, yeah, that's cool. This is great. I'll use it.
So as I'm thinking through these problems, I'm like, as with any engineering task, I'm like, have you gone too far? Right? Is this getting too much out of the box? Right? Yeah. So you're not using it as a crutch. I'm always questioning, am I doing too much out of the box that prevents it from being used, from you using it or whatever? And is that because it does so much and you just want it to do this little thing, is it too fat of a monkey to put in there, right? Like, is it a big beast? You don't want RX. I know that's the number one killer for you.
And
you
part don't of want it that is, dependency. Part of it is the dependency chain, right? Like, you start looking at something, you're like, do I really want to take this all in for this one little like feature of my app if it's a main part of your app, sure. But if it's like this kind of, you know, value add little feature that not everyone's going to use or whatever, it's like, no, don't really want to.
Exactly. But the case would be made is that why do these big fat frameworks, like Shiny always gets that it's too fat. It has these dependency chains. I get it. I do. But if you've done this enough, like I usually don't bring in Shiny for just push or just Bluetooth. It's usually a whole conglomerate of those things because the core has like all the stuff like permissions and people would say, why did you use Essentials? Well, you know, because I want to go to places where Maui might not go.
Yeah.
Maui Web, right? It's coming, John, right? Right? Maui Web.
Maybe Web one assembly. Day. That'd
Come
be
on.
Great.
Come on. I'd love it.
I mean, it would have saved us the whole last episode talking about Blazor.
Exactly. Right. So anyhow, I do want to go to places where Maui won't potentially.
Mm-hmm.
There also is other hosting platforms out there like Uno. I respect the work they're doing. I haven't had an Uno contract come up, but it's there. I want to make sure I support it at some point. Right. So I need my own permissions, the ability to request them. So that's outside of Essentials. You might need some file storage. That's a big thing in Shiny. Like I said, geofences don't save. Android's like, I don't know how to do this, right? So you have to have these back end things to support the lack of platform support for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as time gone on, like I said, you started with this little thing, settings, and then it grew to, well, I want to store JSON, and then it grew to, how do I bind this? And then how do I do dependency injection? And then how do I do logging, right? So you end up with this big, long chain, whether you want it or not. And then eventually it can turn into a framework if you don't manage it. So that's what happened with mine. So how do you do this? When you look at it, let me ask you the question, John. So you're doing this jobs thing right now. He wouldn't take the dependency on Shiny. I'm not wounded. I understand it. That's the important thing. I'm only slightly wounded, slightly. When you start stuff like that, what's the first thing? How do you write a cross-platform thing? How do you usually write a
cross-platform thing?
I know it sounds like a loaded question, but where do you start?
I usually start, I think it's with understanding, I mean, what my own needs are from it, right? So like if we take the task stuff, I think there's two paths I would go down at that point when I'm starting to put this into my app. One of them is, is it big enough or is it small enough rather to kind of just put in my app and not kind of bring out into a library or bring a library in for? Like, I think I do that decision before I even kind of look to see what's out there, is I'll kind of evaluate like, how much of this do I need? What's the kind of the amount of code going to look like? And in the case of the background, you know, task, job stuff, whatever, you know, I kind of found like, oh, that's not that heavy for the parts I want to use for me to write it. Now, at that point, you know, in my own app, either I'll decide like, I'm just going to do it. I'm not going to spend the time on like trying to build something that's more reusable. But often, you know, when I'm trying to do something like that, in the case of Zebra Crossing, it was like, oh, no, I want to use this in my app. But I also see like there is a lot of potential that others would probably want to use this too. And probably you want to use about the same, you know, surface area of an API that I want to use. And then I start thinking like, okay, how do I, you know, should I extract this out into something that I can just throw up there, let other people use? Or, you know, at that point too, it's also, if I get to the point where I'm like, this might be kind of too big to do on my own, is there something out there that already does it? Of course, right? And then it's kind of that whole evaluation of, is it, I've done a few times, I think, where I've looked at options that are out there. And to be fair, not necessarily Shiny specifically, but when there is something like that, where I see this whole like infrastructure built around this one piece that I want, that often has made me kind of go like, oh, I can make a small version of this that's just right. That piece, so that somebody else in the same boat might want that too.
And it usually makes sense. I'll be honest. It absolutely does. Like in the case of Shiny Push, I know a lot of people like the abstraction there, but it's a heavyweight, right? It's got the core attached to it. I might actually, I'm working on a 4.0 where I might decouple it, but Push in itself is a small little piece. It needs that hosting infrastructure to get at stuff like the app delegate.
Right. And I get it totally. Right. Cause like you said, like for your own purposes, which is the thing. So first of all, you know, again, you're not getting paid directly by anyone consuming Shiny to do the work. Right.
Right.
So like, you know, to some level, like we both are the same. We're partly doing this. Like we could do this and just always keep it to ourselves, closed source, and never throw it over the wall. But that's not how we think. And so we're putting these things out there. And so at the same time, it's like, yeah, but if you don't like it, then just too bad. Like you're not paying me to change it. So for your own purposes, you know, it's your primary use case. I totally get the whole layering of things. It's like you said, it's like, well, yeah, if I want to have logging, I have a thing that does logging for me. Why wouldn't I just use that? Because that already, you know, sits on top of the way I do configuration and all the different things. Now, I am kind of curious, like with the dependency injection stuff and using more of like the Microsoft, the abstractions, the whatever hosting,
the extensions.
Extensions. Yeah.
I don't use the hosting extension.
Sorry, not the hosting. Yeah, I know. I confuse those terms up, and I know they're like very loaded meanings to different things that I conflate often. Has that gotten you to a point where like you're able to more decouple those types of things? Like,
yes.
If we all can agree on, yes, those are the abstractions that everyone should use, then like logging is kind of like, you know, whatever you want to use for it.
The Microsoft extensions actually kind of led the way for Shiny, because it was like, I mean, Prism's been doing that for a while. They had their own kind of container abstraction layer. But really it was, I kind of wanted something general that everybody was going to use, right? And the Microsoft extensions kind of lent themselves to that. They have a fantastic DI layer. Despite what people think, it is fast. It's not as feature rich as something like AutoFac. It doesn't have to be. But what it did do is made a pluggable layer. So AutoFac can get involved. You like AutoFac?
I was going to say, like you can plug in AutoFac. Those. Yeah.
But people would be complaining because a lot of Shiny is obviously background stuff. How the heck do you log to it? Right. Yeah. So people would be like, I don't like your logging abstraction. Okay. Well, now it's built on Microsoft Extensions logging.
So use whatever which you want.
Pretty much everything plugs into now. Well, what about App Center? Okay, fine. Here's an App Center abstraction I made. By the way, don't use it anymore. I got rid of it because App Center is gone next year.
Yeah.
Anyhow, it was easy to say. Now you can put whatever the heck you want in. I'm using it. You can call it fat, but you know what? The good thing is that you guys in Maui took both of those for me as well. Right, you ended up taking those dependencies.
Yep.
The abstraction, even if it's just the abstractions, it's already there. You can't call me all the fat anymore. You guys did it too.
Yeah,
I get the benefit. Well, You're sharing the weight.
When we had the opportunity to rethink some of these things with Maui, right? So, like, I know there's been there's a little discourse as of late, as to like, oh, Maui. You know, we redid too much and that hurt quality. And like, yeah, that's not untrue. That a lot of changes and the way that we kind of approached it meant that we took a step back in quality, maybe from forms. That's a whole other topic. But one of the things that allowed us to do was to rethink some of those decisions, right? And that, I think at the time where we were planning this out, you know, one of the things that there was two big pieces for me. So as somebody who has done enough creating of libraries and stuff for Xamarin Forms and Xamarin in general, one of the big sticking points was all of the lifecycle stuff you have to tap into, right? So many times with plugins that I made, and I'm sure you've found this too, you know, people aren't calling the right lifecycle methods from your library. You know, like the whole old pattern was like, right, was to like, you'd basically ship a README. And I know James did this in like all of his plugins, where it's like, it'd pop open a README text and it'd be like, you have to put this line of code here for iOS and this line of code here for Android, and blah, 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 right? And so that to me was one of the biggest opportunities as a library creator, a plugin author, that I could influence how MAUI went. And so, you know, I really pushed for like, let's think through the lifecycle thing a little bit better so that people aren't having to put random code places. And so that libraries could build their own extension methods that, that people could then very easily call against their app builder, essentially. Right.
And it made things, so I think, it did make things easier, right? It just,
I think it's generally been good. I mean, there might be some cases here and there that we still need to look at or that we don't cover exactly, but
push on iOS. Know,
for the, yeah, no. so the push on iOS is an interesting one. And this episode know why feels like,
no, don't go into it. Don't go into it.
Okay, fine.
It's a deep one. That's a deep one.
It is, you know, Apple and App Store rules and all that fun stuff. There, I think it's solvable, though. It's just we have to spend the time to actually do it.
But I got around generally, it. You just have to copy in those code, the code.
No, that I John know. I don't want to do that way, though. There's a better way to do it. We'll talk.
Okay,
we'll talk. So that was one big part. And then the other part was finally, I don't know what the right term is. Is it succumbing to, giving up on, learned helplessness? To the idea of, you know, using all of the Microsoft extensions, patterns and stuff and DI.
Well, I want to comment on that one because I really feel that you guys got that right, because it really, I mean, you're not all the way there. We won't even go into it to shell and stuff, but in terms of the life cycle and how you spin up an app, it's very much like ASP.NET.
Yes.
Right. Which is important because a lot of your devs that are coming over, yep, aren't your native devs. They aren't your Kotlin devs. They're going to be people that are probably out of ASP.NET, C#.NET. They're going to want a familiar pattern. They have that now. They're going to want it. It's not perfect. It's obviously, you know, when you're going from web to mobile, it's a very different setup, but they're going to be comfortable because they have configuration. So they know how that works. They're going to have logging. So they know how that works. And they're going to have DI, which they obviously know how that works. So all those comfortable patterns are there, and you've built it well with stuff around it in the app builder, like the life cycles and all that stuff. So now it's like a comfortable world to be in.
Yeah. And that was the goal, really. And that's, I think, where I kind of finally, you know, agreed that, okay, this is what we should do because of all of those reasons. Because of the familiarity with that pattern from ASP.NET developers, because of, you know, being able to wire things up in a consistent way and all that kind of thing. Like, I'm very happy in hindsight that that is the direction that we went. I've you know, had a few sips of the dependency injection Kool-Aid and all of that. I have
a screenshot of that, by the way, because it took a long time to get there. It was a tough sell, like RX.
You know, it was a cultural thing too, to a large extent in Xamarin. You know, I think I know like James came around maybe even sooner than I did. I know he messed around with some stuff in Xamarin forums to kind of like figure out how would we do this a little bit here.
Oh, I've been doing it for years. I've been trying to convince him for years.
James
was always on my case about DI or RX or something. I was like, dude.
He finally
admitted, he's like, look, I don't have anything against DI as long as it's out of the box. Fine, James, I'll let you have it. I'll let you have it after all these years. You're still paying the ass.
It's and
but
yeah.
You took it, well, you did it.
Like I said, I think he came around to it. So like, yeah, there was a large culture of like, you know, these kinds of things of weight and heft are not suitable for the mobile side of things. And I'm not going to say to be fair, but, you know, in that, I'm not saying it. I said I won't say it. In the early days of mobile, we were fighting for as much performance and app size and all of that kind of stuff as we could fight for. And those two worlds maybe could have been melded together a lot sooner than they were. But I think, you know, to some extent early days, there was concern of adding this kind of stuff in, and that was maybe somewhat justified.
So I'm going to take a different look at that. I think I have a different kind of perspective on it just because I've seen it. So a lot of the Xamarin Form stuff, a lot of people got ticked off at me in the early days of Shiny because I was forcing DI, right? It didn't matter. If Xamarin Forms wasn't doing DI, I had a need of getting into the Android application, and a need of getting into the iOS delegate, etc. Those weren't a thing with Xamarin Forms, right? And people didn't understand it. They didn't understand DI. They didn't understand why I couldn't just do events. It's because people kept wiring these things up at the wrong time, right?
Yeah.
But everybody was doing AutoFac. Like, there were so many companies, big old dinosaurs, doing dependency injection, whether Xamarin Forms wanted to do it or not, and whether it was performant or not, they were going to do it. But where would they be running that container on Android? It would be with the Xamarin Forms activity startup, right? So all this infrastructure would be spun up, and your background process would be like, where is this stuff? Where is it?
Right? Yeah.
But it didn't. It never hit an activity, so they'd fail, right? The other thing was is that performance, generally, that the people that I'm seeing writing MAUI or Xamarin Forms apps, they're usually enterprise. They don't care if it takes 5 seconds for the app to turn on for a customer. They're interested in the RAD, the rapid application development.
Yeah, but
tough customer.
Yeah, no. Like I get it. And the sad thing is though is like those two things kind of were competing goals, and to an extent still are. And not for it, for the only reason of like somebody wants to look and say. And we've seen this like, you know, measuring happening on Twitter over the last, even over the last like year or two, right? Of like, oh, well, we start up this fast. I'll, you know, look at how slow MAUI is. And it's like, that was always a theme, right? With Xamarin, was like, we were in startup mode. We were in trying to gain market share and everything. So it's like, you couldn't have your thing out of the box look bad compared to the competitors. And so as dumb as that may be in the reality of most, you know, customers ended up doing these things and not, you know, having that as a realistic startup time to compare against, that was kind of the goal, and for, you know, for better or worse, and obviously worse.
It does make sense. It does make sense what you're saying. It's just, I've seen it for both sides. I've seen an app, the worst I've ever seen, one of the worst managed apps I've ever seen. They used AutoFac, and on the Android tablet they had, it took 25 seconds to start up, and that was acceptable. And they had something like 250 dependencies. I'm like, okay, so guys, you probably should have stopped and thought about the engineering here. You're not really solving any problems as much as you are creating them.
Yeah.
So you see it from both perspectives, right?
Yeah.
But again, it was a big B2B app, so they don't care about the startup. But 25 seconds, I mean, nowadays, I'm pretty sure the OS would be like,
Apple. I think Apple gives you 20, maybe. Maybe that was a while back.
Startup is 8 seconds.
I think they used to give you more, but yeah.
No, never on app delegate start. If that UI isn't kicking in 8 seconds, the watchdog is kicking you off.
Yeah,
it's problems. Always been there. It's just that their processors and RAM is so damn fast, it just like zips on through, right? Whereas the Android ones are like, how slow can I go? All right, 25 seconds it is.
25 seconds, huh? Yeah, I know. We've seen some really fun things that people do to themselves in app startup too that make things even worse.
So my goal was to get structure to deal with the lack of understanding in lifecycle. So now that that's built in with what you guys did with MAUI, you also took some of the fat that I carry with Shiny. Mm-hmm. It worked out great. Now there's a balance in the ecosystem, and I don't have to say wire in these 10 million things. Because of boilerplate, it's already there. Because that was the hardest thing. And you guys had the luck of this draw, was that you could always have the base app delegate and you could always have the base Android activity, which that's a big, people don't realize you can't just, because we don't have multiple inheritance.
Yeah.
You can't just say, stick this on top. It's like a game of whack-a-mole.
Who gets it? Yeah.
Who's the common denominator? And it's gonna be us. You guys. So it just became a case of, well, boilerplate it is. So with MAUI, when you did that, that was a great thing, because it saved all of these things, saved push on iOS, for wiring in all these plugins, because that's what we needed. Plugins needed that infrastructure to hook into these things without competing with Xamarin Forms and or MAUI. They needed a storage engine, yada, yada, yada. We go through it. They needed DI logging. Now we have all those things. It's great.
Yeah, no, I think it. And if you look at like the number of plugins that have kind of cropped up in the ecosystem, like I'm curious if I just, you know, today search MAUI plugin, You know, on NuGet, like already I'm seeing 139 results. Now I don't know how many of those are things that are awesome or things that are, you know, maybe less awesome, but there's a bunch of stuff out there. That's for sure. And like the thing that I like, and this is kind of back to when you ask like how I approach doing this. I like seeing a lot of, and I like the pattern that, you know, did eventually kind of get established where we called them plugins, which is kind of interesting. Maybe I don't know if that's my favorite term, you know, to have used or not, but it did kind of give people a thing to kind of like go out and search for. And so yeah. I like it when I see like the night, you know, the neat and tidy, like, hey, this plugin deals with managing the screen brightness, right? And like that's it. That's all it does. It's a little thing. But like if you want to do something with that, you just pull that in and it's pretty light and you get it.
See, I was always pulling the big guys that do the stuff, but teach his own, whatever you need it to do, right? They're, you're right. There's a ton of stuff out there. I don't usually like the term plugin because it involves, you know, because we use it for everything now. We even use it for UI components and controls. It's like, no, that's a control library or that's a control. It's not a plugin. I mean, it is a plugin. You just can pop it in a NuGet and it goes, but you know what I mean? It's a plugin is like a dependency injected thing. And it runs
right.
On both platforms. So, I don't know. Call me.
I mean, maybe the term has been, you know, quiet long enough that it could come back, which is components. Do you remember components back in the Xamarin days?
I do remember.
Did you publish a component to the Xamarin component store ever?
No, it was difficult to say the least. And I was a big fan. I'm like, why are we doing this? I knew why you guys were doing it because you wanted to have a marketplace for it, right? For people selling, which NuGet lacks.
Yeah, to this day still. I think that's like one of the, you know, when we were like doing the component store, that was the one thing that we kind of said, like, we could just use NuGet if somehow we could better tie in, you know, the pricing or like some kind of licensing or whatever, but never happened.
It was a great idea. I just didn't want to do both. You know what I mean? I guess I've never been doing open source. Well, at one point I was hoping for money, but at this point I'm just like, does it work for me? Great. Go. So even back then I was like, do I want to go to the hassle of dealing with sales and taxes in Canada?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could put free components on that. There was some, so like, I mean, I was on the components team. I eventually managed the components team. So we did a lot of work in this area. It's near and dear to my heart too, even if it is, you know, a long lost, forgotten thing, but there was some cool stuff. Like one of the things I remember doing too was, there was like a web embed thing you could do. It was like Appetize or something. I don't remember the name, but you could like run an app in the browser. And so we would start updating some of the component listings with like the demo app of the component, and you could hit the play button in the browser and like see it all working and interact with it.
You guys were fancy.
Oh yeah, that was fun. Until we got the bill for like how much it was going to cost to keep doing that for all the pages. Like, yeah, that was cool, but no, we're good without it.
How far we've come. It was a great idea back then. It really was. So yeah,
I liked it.
I wanted to bring up one thing was how we write these components, right? How we write the plugins or whatever. And because I know I've been asked a couple of times, like, how did you get here? Right. How did we arrive at this? And it was, you know, people usually think, well, you start from the back, like what are the platforms support and then work your way up. I think I start in reverse. I might be the only crazy guy that does it. Like when I did Bluetooth, I was like, how do I want this thing to work? So I started with the interface, which we're going to get to in a few. I'm sure it's coming up too. I started with the interface. This is how I want it to work. And then I would say, well, can I have it? And most of the times I get it right. Most of the time, you know, Android comes along with some weird permission. I feel sorry for you essential guys because the permissions that are coming in Android, they're going to hurt.
Permissions are always fun. Every platform change is always fun.
Those ones are the way they're doing them. Anyhow, you know, you had to settle with how the platforms would work, and you'd sometimes end up having to kind of change the way you were doing things a little bit. But most of the time you could either, you know, you'd only have to change a little bit. So your interface would still work pretty good. And then you'd have to bow to one platform, or you'd say, okay, you know what, Android, you are going to remember your geofences because I've got infrastructure that can save it for your dumbass and respin it when you boot up. Because that was the problem, right? Android just was like, you couldn't just say, here's geofences, keep spinning them up.
Yeah.
So, you just made the platform behave and you made it, try to make it behave the same. But I always started with the interface.
Yeah, I feel like I kind of went from both directions at the same time, usually, where I might have an idea of how I want to use it. And I think this is something that, I've learned to have some confidence in, thinking that I am correct in saying this, which is like, I think I'm pretty good. And I think you're pretty good too at figuring out like, what should this look like? What's the shape of this thing in terms of making it useful and easy to understand how to use and stuff to the customer, right? Because I don't know, I've used some libraries and packages over the years that you get and you're like, what? Like how, this makes no sense. This is a weird way to hold this, right? So I think, we've got a knack for kind of thinking through that part of it. But I always kind of do that in tandem with understanding like how each platform is going to fit into that too, to an extent. And I might not always get it right. And there's definitely times where you start creating like the thing that you want, how you want it to look like and work, and it doesn't quite fit, even though you thought maybe it would.
Yeah, it happens. I will try and bend the platform to my will a little bit.
Yeah,
if I can. You don't really bend iOS though. That's
and I did that to an extent. Like one of the examples I think was with Zebra Crossing. Like when I first started making that, I didn't do it with forms in mind. I don't think forms was around actually when I first started making that. Not in any meaningful sense.
Okay.
And so like one of the things was like, oh, I want just a method to say like scan barcode and get back a barcode, right? And that didn't work super nicely when you start considering the different platforms and how they do like, an activity versus a view controller and having to get the context for Android and pass that in and, knowing where to return things and all that kind of stuff. So that was a case where I was kind of plagued by doing some hacky stuff to try and make like that work properly. Cause it's like, I think that's one of the things I always aim for is like, how can I make this super simple, but but still useful broadly enough to make anyone successful at it, right? Like if I was downloading this package, what would I want to have to do to make this work? And it's like, well, scan a barcode, give me back the barcode, right? Like that's how I want it.
Stupid simple.
Yeah.
It's really what it should be. I could say I try to get that always right. And I think I do. I know a lot of people will obviously complain about the RX stuff, but
it's there.
It's a hill I'll die on, unfortunately, but
that's fair. I mean, and you're entitled to it given, again, that this is all free code that others can take and do whatever they want to do with. If they want to fork it and get rid of RX, then, they're welcome to do that. Right.
I do offer async async versions of the stuff, but
yeah, still. So there you go.
People really should learn RX. It'd be good for you. So let's talk about essentials. I think when I started Shiny, or at least the base concept of it, I think I had talked to James about doing a Xamarin standard.
Okay.
I've been bugging. Turns out that guy and you had already started something in the background and none of the community was involved. Drove me nuts. I was like, you guys suck.
Yeah.
You guys suck.
So essentials was maybe one of the most delightful things I've gotten to do from, a spend work time on it perspective, because we got to basically go and say, what every developer wants, if I could design this from scratch again, right? And so over the years, we saw enough patterns emerging in different plugins that got released. A lot of them were James's plugins. A lot of them were probably your plugins. And so there was these common things that we saw over and over again. Like one of the good examples was James had a plugin for just tracking the current activity in Android, right? And so like when we talked about the lifecycle method stuff, it's like being able to use that from like another library developer's perspective was always pretty critical for a lot of different things you would code. And so it's like, that was a good thing to say, hey, we can put this into Essentials and then maybe other people can depend on that instead of, you know, James's one-off plugin, which was fine, worked great. However, people kind of see that. And again, if you're going through like the dependency chain and evaluating, am I going to use this thing? You know, more people are kind of looking at like, well, do I want to use this random thing that's in the dependency chain? Or do I want to use it, the one that just bases itself on Essentials, right? Which is the thing that I understand and know. So that was kind of the spirit of it, I would say. We often talked about the 80-20 rule. And the idea there was, how can we make, you know, 80% of the users or use cases of a particular area of functionality happy and successful, and not worry about the long tail kind of 20% that might be like, yeah, that this almost does what I want, but I need this other little thing, right? And so we would try to solve kind of with that in mind, and full well knowing that for those 20%, they're going to have to go look elsewhere and do something different or do it on their own or whatever. But that's okay, because the value we get from pleasing those 80% and the amount of effort that goes into making that successful is much less than trying to please, you know, 95% of people.
But it was smart anyways, because you guys got a very, I don't want to call it simplistic. What it was doing made it simplistic, right? Yeah. The look, the API surface was simplistic. So it's easy to consume, right? Which was really good. And because people don't often understand the background sense of things or what goes into those, right? They just want to say, you know, locations is a great one, right? Because you can obviously do a ton with background, but in Essentials, and it is Essentials, just get me the current location. Where are you at and now?
That was our 80%, right? It's
turn the radio on, get it from where I am now, return. That's it. Yep. You need a permission?
And make that easy.
We have the permission. Get permission, get location permission, right? Like it was basic, and it was exactly what, you're right, those 80% needed.
And at the time, like that's really what we had found, is there was a lot of churn in terms of people developing or coming in to develop for the platforms that were kind of like, I can do a Hello World app, but as soon as I want to start doing stuff that like I would want from a mobile device, like location or, you know, getting the battery information or whatever, I don't know how to do that. I don't know where to go. There's nothing in the box. So the idea was kind of Essentials, you know, put some of that in the box. And I think the other part of the 80-20 was we didn't want to stomp on, you know, people's work that were going farther in those areas either, right? The goal wasn't to like, you know, extinguish every plugin that had any functionality related to us, right? That was never the goal.
You didn't follow Microsoft's there's that thing they've got.
It's funny. I've never since I've been here. But I've never since I've started working for Microsoft actually, you know, been involved in any of those sinister plots. That's strange. I thought I would have run across one or two by now.
Don't let it happen.
But you know, fun part here, trivia time. Do you know what the original code name was for Essentials?
Well, it clearly wasn't Xamarin Standard that I had suggested to James.
No.
All right.
No guesses at all.
The fun part is I was talking with you guys about it at the time, but I was not privy to the name.
Okay. Yeah. So at one point, I don't know who said it. I don't know who decided that this was the name. But at one point we kind of said, like, you know, Essentials, the goal here really is to like give you the whole kit and caboodle.
Oh, in the box now, the caboodle.
Yeah,
that was the code word. I do remember that. That was at an MVP summit where James supported, and I was like, "You."
And I think we had to change the name at one point anyway, because I think caboodle might be like a trademark or something, like it's a product name, right?
So, oh, that's a shame, because it was actually a really good name. Really good name. It was well thought out.
My fork of Xamarin Essentials I just saw is still called Caboodle. So it lives on. Lives on.
Nice. So the one thing that I know people didn't like, because one of the things that I tried to do is with Shiny was obviously making it dependency injection aware, but I also wanted to make it testable. So I'm big on unit testing on my side of the fence. Yep. You guys, I don't want to say you don't do it. It falls under a different category, right?
Yeah.
So for essentials, it just had to work. Like it doesn't,
yeah,
you don't have to worry about it working in the user's app. That's their app, not your app.
Right.
Right. Shiny had to approach it from this thing needs to be testable within their app. Right. So I think that was one of the key things. I know Dan Siegel, he was a big guy on DI too. And we were like, who thought of this? And you guys, you and James, you were
statics. I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus.
I did.
However, I mean, you don't know the right person or persons to throw under the bus, but essentially, Miguel. You know, see what I did there? We had a mandate to not do things with interfaces, like, and without getting too deep into the technical details, again, this kind of goes back to the whole culture of like worry about performance and interfaces and, you know, like V tables and all that kind of stuff is implicated to an extent in how performance of things goes. Now you can debate the extent of that, which, you know, is obviously pretty minimal, especially nowadays. But anyway, at the time,
now you have them.
Yeah. At the time it was a thing, but the what I liked is like somebody made a thing to like generate the interfaces and like the wrapper, right? Every time we updated, they published theirs and then people would do that. Like the argument kind of always was, you know, I don't look at getting an interface stubbed out of Apple's, like their location implementation on iOS, right? And we were kind of arguing that we're sort of, I mean, we're going to elevate ourselves to that same level of like, no, this is the platform API. Like you don't have to test it. It's the underlying thing.
Yep.
Like you don't go, you know, you might mock out some stuff for things you use in other places, but like you're not using ASP.NET and trying to like, you know, maybe that's a bad example because they have interfaces everywhere. But yeah, again, back to like Apple, you're not trying to like usually mock that out, or maybe you end up wrapping, you know, you're creating your own service pattern and wrapping it and stuff, right? So that was the recommendation. It was like, yeah, if you really feel strongly about, you know, doing that, then create your own pattern over it. Like what's the big deal?
You know, it's funny you say that too, because there's cases now where with Shiny, I've even thought about just doing statics, because you shouldn't be taking, you don't need to mock my stuff. The number of times I've seen an abstraction over top of my already abstracted stuff is infuriating. Stop doing that.
Yeah.
Abstract your business, man. So I have.
Yeah, it's like, it's the whole like
how do you want your device to work? Like get temperature, not get bytes. Not connected Bluetooth. Just get the temperature. That's your business. Why are you extracting Bluetooth over Bluetooth? Just your thing is temperature device. Get temperature. That's it.
Yeah.
Who cares how it works?
It's the same story of like trying to, you know, create your own like database layer for everything, right? And it's like that whole cliche of like, do you ever actually intend to switch out the back end? Most people never actually do. So why did you do the work?
And now, here we are. Now I'm even talking about going the other way because you don't need to abstract those things. The delegates that I offer in Shiny, yes, they're a bit different, right? That's responding to an event, but it's not the actual business. You're not having like a manager to deal with. It's just, here's the thing.
Yeah.
And you can execute that code, right? It's almost more of a marker than anything. So that makes sense.
And then the only place that I kind of, you know, can see maybe more of an argument now still is, and I did this in my own app as well, being able to like run on different platforms, right? So at the end of the day, if I want to do location, that's great, but I can't really do that with the Essentials APIs on WebAssembly. And so, you know, for the time being, it's like, well, what do I do here? I kind of make my own service, you know, pattern wrapped around it.
Right. And that makes sense. And that's why I do what I do, right? That's why I have interfaces in my own permission model, because that may be something I want to do.
Yeah. But in doing that, I'm not, I'm not like testing or mocking out, you know, the interfaces from Essentials. Right. So it's like,
it is,
who cares? I guess I could have gone the other way and created my own implementation and then used those interfaces. I don't know.
There was a funny thing. So when I was typing up my thoughts for this episode, I remember going back when you guys were looking at doing geofencing. So Bluetooth comes up a lot in Essentials, and I don't think people really understand the API surface there. It's large. It's hard. That's why Essentials doesn't do it. Good luck. Yep. There's no platform that does that out of the box. So quit bitching about it. Now, there was a thing when we were talking about geofences. So I was involved in that because I had a I had the geofencing. I had the shiny one. And I had wanted to work with the Essentials team on this. And I kept saying, well, you need a storage engine. So I don't know if you remember this, but you were involved in the talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying, well, you really need like a storage engine like SQLite. And you're like, nope, I don't want that dependency. That was like the first thing. Which makes sense, right? Because then you've got this other open source. And your thing at the time was, I'm a fan of the flat file.
Yeah.
But it does make sense. And I ended up saying, well, I need to store something. If the Essentials team wants to take geofencing at some point, okay, I've got a repository that does text files of JSON. And that's how I do it still to date. That's how Shiny starts. It takes the object, stores it the ide.json, stores the file. And then when the app starts up, I read all the JSON files into memory and it works great. It's always worked. So that was something you influenced on me a while ago. But it made sense.
Well, yeah, I tried my best. I had that epiphany. So when James was making, I think, was it called Monkey Cash? I think it still might be. Which is just like a really simple, like, you know, caching library to work across mobile, and had some like things like expiration and stuff like that. And they were, he had like a SQLite backend. I think he used like Frank's, you know, SQLite thing. Yeah, which is great, you know, fine. And then I like did a Light DB backend because I was like big into Light DB at the time. I was using that for my own app, and I'm like, I don't want to take SQLite and Light DB. I'm already using Light DB, so I'll make a thing for that. And then I had the epiphany. I'm like, wait a minute, files and folders, they're great for this use case, right? So like the whole cache thing was like, you have a key. And you have some object that was serialized to be cached. Just put it in a folder. And the key is the file name. And all you have to do to go retrieve it is just get that file. And you can tell when the last time that cache was written by the timestamp on the file. And you can expire it based on that timestamp. And like, why are we doing anything more difficult than this, right? It was just like, because this,
it
like,
wasn't a performance issue, right? It really wasn't. It wasn't memory. It wasn't performance. Just write the file. You're absolutely right. That was one I did. I was trying to fight with you. You were having none of it. And it was a fundamental. You were absolutely right. That was the best.
And I think if I remember, I don't remember the exact source that I heard it, but I was listening to maybe like a podcast or some video where people were talking about like how they did things back in like, you know, really like COBOL and like just older languages, older systems and stuff. And somebody was remarking about how like, yeah, databases sometimes used to just be like a collection of folders and hierarchy and files. And that worked pretty well. Right. And I'm like, oh yeah. Why did we get more complex than that in some cases?
They still kind of are, in a manner of speaking.
Yeah. It's much more
smartly organized files, but
definitely.
I guess we don't need to get in the science of that, do we? All right.
So what else we got? Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked about we Essentials.
I think we went through all the things. I had to. Yeah. I tried
the one thing.
Shiny. It's just lessons learned from Shiny, I guess, or that got me there.
Yeah. You know, the other thing I think that might be worth mentioning or talking about too is like, I don't know what you do when you, or how often you make a new like GitHub repo and library and new Git package and stuff. Like I find myself, I try to slow myself down on that because I think in the past I've described that, you know, I'm the owner of, you know, many, many open source projects that, and kind of like master of none. You know, I like to get an idea, throw it out there, and then kind of just say, yep, that's there if you want to use it, but I'm not really interested in doing much with it. So one thing that I always end up having, you know, a little bit of effort around, and I still haven't figured out what my system is here, is like, how do you template your whole setup, right? Like I have a repo, I'm going to need workflow YAML stuff to build it on GitHub Actions. I'm going to need, you know, to set up like how I want my NuGet packaging and everything. Do you have a system in place for that?
Not really. I kind of tend to copy, like, obviously the build steps I have in an app, like a full blown app. Obviously the build steps are usually far more complicated. There's a release process around it, and it's beyond like your traditional, just version it, ship it out. Right. So for apps, I have a template for that, but for frameworks or libraries that I'm building, no, I don't. So I know Gerald's got a great one out there. I jumped ahead. Probably shouldn't jump ahead, but
that's okay.
Gerald's got a repo that you can clone stuff from that has the base stuff. But generally speaking, if it's a plugin that I'm going to share that's based like, and I feel it's like a core library to Shiny, I'll put it in Shiny and it just kind of inherits the release process that I've got there that's built up over years. But I don't like to spawn 5 million repos if I can for libraries, unless the repo's not truly proven. Right. So I've got one like health is my big one right now because I want to make that a big thing, but it's complicated and it's far from done. And I have a feeling it's going to be its own living, breathing thing. So I keep it out of the way because I don't know if I'll ever finish it. It could be an unfinished project. And if at some point I'm like, hey, I like this, it's got my stamp of approval, I want to make it open source, I'll just put it into the key offering. Right. And it'll just lockstep with Shiny and I don't have to worry about its process. So it's like I put separate repos for proving stage POCs, little things I'm building. And then if I want to share it, I put it into the core offering and say, here you go. And then I can deal with the support issues in one area. I can deal with the release process in one area. I can deal with the samples in one area because that's another big one. I don't like testing samples in like different repos because I'm like, I want to have access to the source, like to the actual source. So, I know.
Yeah, then you get into like sub modules and all that fun stuff.
Oh yeah, forget it. That's not worth it. So I have the samples and everything all in there, and I don't know. I don't know if it's right. It works for me. Let's put it that way.
So how many? If you went to your GitHub handle, how many repositories would show up by count under your name?
I could take it probably over 100. It's not as bad as I thought, but
okay, that's not too bad.
I do have like the core ones. There's a couple private ones I have, like I said, with my own production.
Now how many of those are forks?
Surprisingly, not as many as you'd think, because I tend to, I'm kind of like you, I want to build it myself to understand what I'm using. I kind of going back to a point I made earlier, if you're using open source to do something that you don't understand, that's probably not a great thing to do because it's only going to make your troubles with it worse. So I like to understand what I'm using. I should be able to build the thing given enough time. I use open source to save myself time and go, yeah, this is great. If I had time, I would build this thing. Right. I guess that's how I look at it. Could I build Maui if I had enough time? Probably not as well as you guys have, but there's more brain power going into it. Right. But I could, I understand what you're doing.
It's all a kind of activity of building it for who, right? If it's for just you, you know, you can kind of pinpoint your own use cases, right? You don't necessarily have to figure out why when I put, you know, a vertical stack layout inside a horizontal stack layout inside three other stack layouts inside a grid inside a, you know, why does it not work well? It's like, well, you're not going to run into as much of that stuff. So,
but I like to understand what I'm using regardless. So given enough time, sure, I could have written it, but I want to save time. So I don't actually have a ton of forks. If I'm forking something, it's either because I need to debug it and fix it, or because I'm doing business continuity, which everybody should be doing anyways. If you take a dependency on something, for God's sakes, clone it. Because if it dies, the maintainer goes belly up or they delete the repo, your business is going to suffer. So you should understand what you're doing with that component, but you should also understand that they can delete it. They don't owe you anything. So clone the damn thing. Do yourself a favor.
And clone it and maybe like don't contribute study back and fully understand it inside and out, but like maybe understand a little bit about what it's doing and how you would, you know, survive if the maintainer went away, right? Like
that's what I mean. It should be to save you time, not to save you understanding.
Yeah,
you're right. You don't have to understand its in and outs. You know, nobody will ever understand all the ins and outs of Maui, including yourself, right? Because it's a team effort there. but you should know the basis of what you're bringing in because you're about to use it. So
yeah, exactly.
I guess that's why I don't, I fork things to fix them, and I fork things to, yeah, again, if that guy deletes that repo again tomorrow or switches it from MIT to some sort of paid license, yeah, which I'm not prepared to take a, you know, a payment on right away or whatever. I just, it's business continuity that I do it. I do it for business reasons.
Yeah.
So there's my long-winded answer on that.
Yeah. I have a few more than that, but you know, not like double or anything, but it does kind of make you look at like, oh yeah, how often do I just spin up a repo for whatever reason? And you know, definitely not constantly updating the hundreds of repos that I have.
I guess I do tend to clean my repos up occasionally too.
Oh, right? I don't. I'm like, yeah, you can store it all forever up in the Arctic vault or whatever, right?
Well, John likes to make fun of me because he knows my kind of OCD is, it's not dependencies, but I like to store my files. If it's stuff I don't use anymore, it gets deleted. Like now, it's garbage. It's gone.
I need Copilot to save me in these cases now and be like, hey, these repos, like you're never going to look at again. Do you want, just let's clean them up. Okay.
We could.
Like, yeah.
You could. Or yeah, back it all up. I don't know. I tend to clean them out. If I think they're absolutely useless or I've, you know, once I've done the fork and I've sent the fix, I'll usually delete the fork and reclone it later if I'm using it for a project. Because I always do my clones with the project I'm working on because that's the version.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I think we've done it for, you know, plugins and frameworks and architecture and whatever other topics we got up to this week.
Have we?
This
is a never-ending topic, though.
I mean, we could do a bunch more episodes on it. I'm sure we'll figure out some more details to talk about in the future on other episodes. You know, this week, it's hard to pick just one thing because it's like all of the plugins, all of the frameworks for the plugin package or product of the week. I did want to, you know, give a mention to, again, to Gerald's template repo. I think that's a cool thing. There's already been a bunch of plugins that have used that and, you know, started shipping things.
It's a great place to start. If you don't know where you're going or how you're writing it.
Exactly.
Start there.
It's a good place. And you know, it's a good way to get your feet wet too if you have an interest in trying to create something that you want to share and give back, right? And it can be something simple. Like I said, like, you know, Gerald's done a few. I know, like I think the screen brightness one was his. It's like, sure, why not? Like that could maybe be an Essentials API, but you know, it's not today, so there's something there for it. So yeah, go out and create some plugins and don't let the you know, the frustrations of people complaining about open source get you down. Obviously the people who have problems are the ones that are always gonna give that feedback more so than the people that are happily quietly using things and appreciative of your work. And you know, something that probably I need to start doing myself a little bit more too is looking at the things that I use and like just going and checking, you know, their repos or the author's profiles. And you know, a lot of people now have like the, hey, buy me a coffee kind of thing, right? I don't know if you have anything set up like that. I don't tend to do it because I, you know, for one, I there's always like kind of blurry lines in terms of stuff I do. Because I tend to kind of do things that are not that work unrelated. So like personal coding and work is kind of a blurry line a lot of times in my life. So I don't want to merge those worlds. But I'm curious, yeah, do you do like sponsorship links or anything?
I have GitHub sponsors. I have.
Okay, cool.
Gerald's been sponsoring me for a long time.
Oh, see, yeah. I've done a few over time, but that's something, yeah, I should probably look back again and see like what are the things that I use regularly and make sure that, you know, I'm giving back even if it's a few bucks a month or something like that, right? As a developer of those things, I would imagine, I mean, it feels good to get somebody, you know, even if it's
appreciation, just
a small token, good, right?
Yeah. You know, and that's a thing just kind of to close it out is if you are doing open source, don't do it with the expectations of money.
No.
I know it's hard. If people were all nice and people came with like issues that weren't wasting your time, that's where really authors burn out, is people being rude.
Yeah.
And people saying, this doesn't work. Well, can you be a professional developer. If somebody told you your app doesn't work, you want a reproducible case so you understand what you're fixing, right? Mm-hmm. So if you understand that the OSS maintainer's time is, it's their time, and you're respectful about it, maintainers wouldn't burn out, right? Yeah. Be professional, be nice, be appreciative, and open source will be a better place for everybody. I think I'm pretty sure you can speak highly to that on the Maui team, right?
Yeah,
and like a lot of misery, and it's not fair. Like
no, and even you know, at times it's frustrating too, just because it's like, yeah, we're doing this, you know, as part of our job. We're very fortunate to you know be able to be paid to work on this stuff. But I have to think about that in you know, yeah. But at the same time, it's like, you know, there isn't like nobody's directly, you know, paying for Maui as a product, right? So it's like it's an open source project. That means it comes with all the open source project, you know, flaws and problems that, you know, things have. So like at some point, you know, help yourself, be appreciative, be patient, and yeah, be nice to people, right? Like it's open source. Like either you go in and get your roll up your sleeves and help fix it, or, you know, be patient and hope that it happens for you, or just kind of say like, okay, it is what it is. Right.
And you guys are a lot nicer than I am. I have no patience for the people that come in and don't follow us. I usually just, I have what I call the ban hammer, and you get banned off the repo.
Yeah,
that's it. I mean, you guys can't do that, which I understand.
No, it is different. And like I said, because we are, you know, paid to work on these things, like we have to have a lot more tolerance of that kind of thing too, because, you know, while they're not paying for Maui directly, like I get it. A lot of people using Maui are Microsoft customers in some capacity. And so we try and keep that in mind, but yeah, certainly, you know, what's the
nice to the humans involved
cliche? Yeah, like, you know, catch more bees with or flies with honey than vinegar kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
100%.
Yeah. Well,
there's our OSS rant for.
There we go.
I won't all go right. Another.
This well, week. We'll see you. We'll see you all next time. Remember, next episode's 100. We've got some fun, chain different kind of episode style planned, I think. So you'll want to check that out. You know, if you have any last minute feedback, questions, thoughts, ideas, concerns, send us a note, drop us a line, go to our website, godmobile.io. You can get our email and all the other contact things there. As always, if you are so compelled, or if we could compel you, think of it as your one good deed for OSS stuff, go and leave a really nice review on Apple Podcasts. We would always appreciate that. But
for the record, John didn't record that. He sounds like a professional DJ, and he doesn't. Even in the beginning.
No pre-rolls here. We're just stumbling through it all as we go, right? All right, Alan. We'll see you on episode 100. Thanks all for listening.